Case number 19-5362. Ahmed Ali Musana, individually and as an ex-friend of Hoda Musana and minor Joe Doe, initials AM, appellant, versus Michael R. Pompeo in his official capacity as Secretary of the Department of State et al. Ms. Jump for the appellant, Mr. Stewart for the appellee.
Good morning, Ms. Jump. You may proceed.
Good morning, and thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. You know, I did try to get Mr. Shelley to cover this one for me as well, but apparently two is his limit for the morning. This case centers on the difference between the ability to administratively revoke a document versus revocation of citizenship status itself. And as the Supreme Court held in Trop v. Dulles, neither the Congress nor the executive, nor the judiciary, nor all three in concert may strip away birthright citizenship without the due process that's guaranteed under the Constitution. That was true when the Supreme Court held so in 1958, and it remains just as true today. There's no dispute here that Hoda Musana was born after her father stopped working as a diplomat.
But after before the notice was received, right?
That is actually in dispute, Your Honor. She was born...
Well, really before us, is the record before us that she was born between the end of the duties and the time of the notice?
Your Honor, there was some documentation presented at the district court by the government showing that the blue list was dated February after her birth, a couple of months after her birth, recognizing the notification.
So what we had before us, there's been a finding that her birth was between those critical dates, right?
There's been a finding that her birth was after his duties ended.
And before the notice was sent, right?
We don't know that it was before the notice was sent, Your Honor.
Isn't there a finding to that effect by the district court?
That is, the district court did defer to the government's holding on that, or the government's representation.
So your answer would be yes to my question, right?
As to the district court's decision, yes, we did ask for a discovery on that issue because we don't believe that it was established and it's in dispute, but that was the holding of the district court. We would say, however, though, that the if you look at the language of Article 43 of the Vienna Convention, it is not as clear that notification is the only measure of when the end of duties, when the end of diplomatic status is triggered. The Article 43 contains the term inter alia, as far as when the function of the diplomatic agent comes to an end, right before listing notification being received by the host state. And as we've set forth in our briefs, the documentation behind the intent at that time was to intentionally leave it open and leave it vague. It is not restrictive, it is expansive, in that it is among other things. The government has argued in other cases and in other situations that diplomatic immunity ends when the duties end, and there is no dispute that the duties ended prior to Ms. Musana's birth here.
Assuming we all think that this turns on notification and nothing else. One of the documents in support of the Donovan Declaration,
yes,
was this UN termination list.
And yes, sir.
You raised some concerns about that.
Correct.
It contains a bunch of comprehensible handwritten notes. We couldn't read them.
Correct.
But it's dated February 5. And so I don't see there's any inconsistency between that and the Donovan.
Yeah, now what I would say to that is that, first of all, there is a date entered as of February 2005, but we are not clear if that's the first time that notations were entered, if that's the first time that there is an entry. We know that February 2005 is the date of the publication.
By itself, says February 5. Now,
Your Honor,
there's other documents, which I'll get to in a minute, but I don't understand why this document is inconsistent with what
Your Honor, I believe that the inconsistency that we point to here is with the October 18th, 2004 letter from the Minister Council for Host Country Affairs at the first time that the Department of State was looking at Ms. Musana's application for a passport.
Ms. Chump, that's why I asked you the question. So what the case really turns on, right? Let me see if I got this right. Is whether there's an inconsistency between between the earlier letter, the one by Graham, and the Donovan letters, right? That's the question.
That is part of the question, Your Honor, but both of those go to revoking... Well, I would say, Your Honor, that both of those go to revoking the document of the passport and the government's right to revoke the document of the passport, not to whether the government, whether the Department of State had the right to revoke her citizenship status.
The Department of State revoked her citizenship. All it did was that, as I understand it, the Department's view is that she never had citizenship and therefore revoked the passport.
Your Honor, she had been issued...
They revoked her passport, but I don't see that. I mean, I just see this as a revoking of the passport because the State Department, she was not a citizen. Is that wrong?
Your Honor, as to revoking the passport, the document itself, that in itself would be within the Department of State's discretion to do administratively. The district court's holding specifically states that Ms. Madonna was not born a U.S. citizen, and she had been previously issued 2 U.S. passports. She had been previously recognized by the Department of State as a United States citizen. And the district court's holding specifically says that, well, no, she's not anymore now.
That doesn't really answer the question. The issuance of the passport is a function by some functionary who has no authority to stop the government from denying citizenship later. A functionary employee of the United States government cannot stop the government from anything, can he?
Your Honor, under 22 U.S.C. 2705, a passport has the same force and effect as proof of citizenship, as do certificates of naturalization or citizenship that is issued by the Attorney General. So when she has had...
That's not the same question. An incorrectly issued certificate or an incorrectly issued passport can't confer citizenship. It may be evidence or proof, if you use the word, of citizenship, but that doesn't confer the citizenship. If it's found to be erroneously issued, the government's not stopped, is it, from denying the person was a citizen ever in the first place?
Your Honor, I would say that the government is not stopped from revoking, again, the document, but once the citizenship has been recognized, the government does not...
Has been recognized by some functionary at the field level, that there's no case that says that government can be stopped from anything by that level employee. I think the rule is the United States government is not stopped by the acts of its employees. Is that not, am I wrong about that?
Your Honor, it wasn't just the fact that this one individual who is the Minister Counsel for Host Country Affairs issued a letter. It's the fact that the Department of State itself, as a department issued, which as the department which is charged with this responsibility, issued 2 passports to Ms. Madonna recognizing her as a United States citizen.
Yeah, but they incorrectly, according to the government's position, recognizing, and what it's doing is revoking the document because it was incorrectly issued.
That is the current says, that the current argument that they're making, and Your Honor, I would say that the court is not required to defer to that because there's
I'm not
no
deference is owed. I'm just asking if the government can't do that. Why can't, what would keep them from saying this was improperly issued, she's not a citizen yet?
I would say, Your Honor, under the authority of C. of U. Tillerson and the authority that's cited within that holding, the government needs to be put to its proof to show that she is not a citizen if it's now changing its mind as to what had happened previously when she was issued 2 U.S. passports recognizing her as a United States citizen. And the government has not yet been put to its proof. This was a grant of a motion to dismiss, which was converted to a summary judgment with no discovery that was allowed to occur, and no new information that came to light to the government that it did not have in late 2004 and early 2005 when it first issued her U.S. passport and renewed it in 2014.
Can I perhaps follow up on Judge Sentell's question in a different way? Which is, if we assume we agree with the government that Ms. Madonna was not a citizen at the time of her birth, I know you're arguing against that, but assume that for a moment. So is your position that even if she were not a citizen at birth, that she would somehow now have a citizenship status through the recognition of citizenship by the executive branch in her passport? And I guess if that's your view, I mean, do you have any support for that proposition? Are there any cases suggesting that the executive branch can confer citizenship on a person who doesn't have it under the Constitution or statute of the United States?
Your Honor, in response to that, I would say that if we compare the cases of the Hazam case and the Magnuson case, In the Hazan case, there was no dispute that the individual never should have been granted citizenship, never had a legal right to citizenship to begin with, and that the law was incorrectly applied at the time that the first passport was granted. There was no dispute in that case that those were the facts. The individual argued that he should be able to keep his citizenship anyway, because once the government granted it, then in that case, they were, once the government had granted that, the government was not allowed to change its mind. That is not what we're arguing here. What we're arguing here is more in line with the Magnuson case, and if you look at that, is that there simply cannot be just a second look, because they decided to take a second look and change their mind, and the government has not been put to its proof on that. At this stage, at a minimum, it's premature.
I think you're fighting the hypothetical. I mean, if we assume she was not a citizen at birth, could she have acquired citizenship by the executive branch giving her passport?
Your Honor, she could have acquired citizenship if she was not a citizenship as of the date of her birth. She would have been able to acquire citizenship in multiple other ways, but she did not, because she relied on the representation and the grant and the official document from the Department of State that she was a United States citizen. As with Mr. Mizana's older children, he would have gone through the process of getting them lawful permanent resident status, and then they became citizens later. And when Mr. Mizana himself was later naturalized, while Ms. Mizana was still a minor, she would have been eligible for citizenship at that point as well. She didn't pursue any of those avenues because during all of those times, she was recognized as a United States citizen. So we just
think her reliance interest creates a right by the executive branch to confer citizenship on her, or by the district court, or by a court to confer citizenship.
We're not asking the district court to confer citizenship on her or the Department of State to confer citizenship on her. What we're asking is that the status quo, where she has citizenship that has been recognized, be maintained until the government is put to its proof to establish otherwise, other than through a motion to dismiss. With review of other documents, which is what has happened here. There has not been the appropriate due process to show that it was erroneously issued and should be revoked. That has not happened, or rescinded. But that has not happened. That due process has not been afforded to Ms. Mizana thus far under the facts of this case and at the status of where we are, you know, at which point the district court granted judgment and ruled her not to be a citizen as of the time of birth. That discretion is not within the district court, and it's not within the Department of State to remove the citizenship status. They can revoke the document. Section 1504, which the government has relied on, gives the government the authority to revoke a passport document if it determines, for whatever reason, that the citizenship, that the document was erroneously issued. But it does not. Nothing in there grants the government any authority, or the, for that matter, the courts, any authority to revoke the citizenship status. That is something that is just simply not up to those agencies to do, and that is what's happened here, is that her status has been revoked through the holding of the district court. If you look at 8 U.S.C. 1504A, the at the end of that is that the cancellation under this section of any document purporting to show the citizenship status of the person to whom it was issued shall affect only the document and not the citizenship status of the person in whose name the document was issued. And that is the statute which specifically refers to the Secretary of State's right to revoke a document that it subsequently believes was erroneously obtained or illegally or fraudulently obtained. It still does not give the right to revoke the status of the citizenship, just the document.
Unless my colleagues have any further questions, Judge Rao, were you finished?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
No questions. Okay,
we'll hear. Mr. Stewart. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Scott Stewart on behalf of the United States. In this case, the District Court granted summary judgment to the government on the plaintiff's many claims that rested on the assertion that his daughter is a United States citizen. The Court concluded, under the governing law and the conclusive evidence submitted by the government, Hoda Muthana is not a United States citizen. The district court also refused to provide the plaintiff with an advisory opinion regarding hypothetical actions that he may take to implicate federal criminal law. The district court was correct to rule for the government. This court should affirm. I'll lead, of course, with the main and central issue in this appeal, Your Honor, regarding the plaintiff's diplomatic status and therefore the citizenship status of his daughter. As we've explained, this case is overdetermined in a number of ways. The Vienna Convention sets forth the governing principles quite clearly. The Department of State has reasonably construed those principles in accordance with that language, and the Department of State has in turn provided a conclusive certification regarding the dispositive citizenship issue, regarding the dispositive diplomatic immunity issue that decides the citizenship question, Your Honors. In short, the analysis goes like this. Under the plain language of the Vienna Convention, a diplomat's functions end, the functions of a diplomat end on official notification to the receiving state. When functions end, that's under Article 43, when those functions end, then immunity ceases when a person leaves the country or after a reasonable time to do so. And usually that can go reasonable period, 30 days beyond, unless the person's already been afforded a reasonable period. That's how the Department of State has interpreted it here. Consistent with that interpretation, Mr. Donovan submitted a certification setting forth the conclusive dates on which the plaintiff possessed diplomatic status. That went through early February 1995, after Ms. Muthana's birth. Under longstanding Supreme Court law applied by other circuits more recently, that is conclusive, that decides the question. And as we've also explained, Your Honor, as I think some of Your Honor's questions pointed out, the underlying contemporaneous documents also bear that out. The Cardex card makes clear that Ms. Muthana was added to her father's diplomatic Cardex card. As Mr. Donovan explains, the only reason to do that would be if Mr. Muthana still retained diplomatic status at the time of her birth. That's why you add another member of the household to make clear that person also enjoyed diplomatic status. And given that certification, which again is based on a reasonable interpretation of the Vienna Convention here, Your Honors, that certification is conclusive. The other courts have done similarly. Most recently, cases like Alhamdi in the Fourth Circuit, Abdul Aziz in the 11th Circuit have noted the importance of certification. But I'd also just note there's a very, very long pedigree for this sort of treatment of a State Department certification, Your Honor. A leading case noting the importance of this is the Supreme Court's decision in In re Baez. This is a late 19th century decision. And the court there noted it was assessing the diplomatic status of someone and that person's amenability to suit. It looked at Secretary of State certifications going back, I believe, to Secretary of State Madison. So the pedigree is quite longstanding. And the Supreme Court emphasized there, Your Honor, that the Department of State had not provided a certification attesting to the putative diplomat status in that case. And he noted that was quite important because in the end of its opinion, it said, look, when a court gets that certification, it's entitled to accept that. It doesn't need to hear collateral proof. And these certifications just have a conclusive, decisive pedigree in the law when based on a reasonable interpretation as the one here is, Your Honor. But as we've explained, they also are corroborated by the relevant documents. If I can just note a few points, and I think Your Honor's already highlighted a number of, mm-hmm. of the responses here in the prior colloquy with my friend. The plaintiff here really did not create any plausible dispute. First of all, as noted, the certification is conclusive, but the plaintiff had a number of assertions that were just kind of hollow and said, look, we don't know about what was said on the blue list. But as I believe Judge Sentell, Judge Tatel pointed out, that document itself has a February 1995 date on it. The Cardex document, the Thomas record, all underscore that the critical date here, the date of official notification, is undisputed. And under the...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but... I just want to call your attention. I agree with virtually everything you said here. It's just one thing about this case that troubles me.
Yes,
and I want to ask you about it. That's this 2004 grant list, which is on official stationery, has the bears the seal of the United States, and it has a different date than the picture. My question is, my bottom line question, the question of we all agree, I agree with you in terms on notification. Notification is a question of fact. Here we have two documents with two different notification dates. Now, you say that, say in your brief that it speaks only of the date of employment, but it doesn't say that he was employed between those dates. It says he was notified to the U.S. mission during this period, and that's And that's a technical term under the Vienna Convention. In fact, the phrase is virtually identical to paragraph 39, which says, if someone's already in the territory, from the moment his appointment is notified. So it just looks to me like we've got two competing letters here, both from the same office, both on the same letter, different people. One has a December date, one has a February date. Isn't that just a classic? So how can you grant summary judgment based on that, particularly since...
Sure, Your Honor. So we don't know what purpose the Graham letter was prepared for. It does not squarely address Ms. Muthanna. It doesn't address her.
It addresses the question in this case. That's the question, isn't it? You agree with me, right?
I think official note. Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Is the date of notification? That's the only question. If notification was in February, you win, because she was born while he was diplomat. So it all turns on notification. And what we have here is two competing pieces of evidence. Very strange, but how can you grant, particularly since we have to at this stage, give the benefit of that to the plaintiff, how can summary judgment be granted? Yeah.
There are a couple reasons, Your Honor. Most centrally, I take your point about the mention of notification, but it does not address the question of notification of termination. It says that the person was notified for those stretch of dates.
You don't have to look at the Geneva Convention. The Geneva Convention just says, or if already in the territory, from the moment of appointment, it is notified to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. That's all. It doesn't have to say termination. Notified. That's exactly the language from the Geneva Convention. And it said that during this period of time, he was recognized by the department as entitled to full diplomatic immunity during that period of time. Which suggests that it wasn't after that. I'm not saying you're wrong. I just don't understand how you can grant summary judgment on this record.
Sure, Your Honor. I think I've got a couple.
Tell me more about this letter and where it comes from.
Understood on your concerns, Your Honor. Let me see if I can answer those directly.
Yeah.
The thing that I would notice is there is a difference between notice of appointment and arrival on the one hand, and notification of final departure or termination of the functions. Article 10, 1A of the Vienna Convention emphasizes those as different things. You need notification of all pieces, or there's a requirement for notification of all pieces. So there is a question. The Donovan certification does address official notification of termination. The Graham letter does not address that piece, Your Honor. It speaks only to this other period. It doesn't squarely speak to what happened after that period. So for all we know, he was just...
The other letter doesn't say anything more either.
Mr. Donovan's certification, Your Honor?
Right. These are identical letters except for the date.
They're not, Your Honor. The Donovan letter squarely says, and this is on page 18 of the Joint Appendix, on February 6, 1995, the United Nations provided the U.S. mission with official notification of Mr. Muthanna's termination from the Yemeni mission. It also notes the notification of when he had been terminated, September of 94, and then it says that Mr. Muthanna and his family enjoyed diplomatic immunity until February 6, 1995. So it addresses the different things.
I still don't see why that's any different, why that's necessarily on its face inconsistent with the Graham letter. Your letter, the one you're relying on, the February letter, provides more information, but on the technical question of notification, they're inconsistent.
Your Honor, it's not that there's not an inconsistency here. It's that the Donovan Declaration is there's not an inconsistency on any relevant question. The Donovan issue speaks more comprehensively to the breadth of issues presented to this court. The Graham letter is clipped and addresses only part of the features regarding Mr. Muthanna, his termination, the notification, and his status. The Donovan certification speaks across the board of this is when official notification happened, this is when he had diplomatic immunity, and this is when it ended. The Graham letter doesn't purport to speak to those things. This is why there's not a dispute, Your Honor. It's just, I take Your Honor's point about what the Graham letter says.
I'm looking at it right now. It says, according to the information provided to us officially by the United Nations, our records indicate that the plaintiff was notified to the United States mission as a diplomatic member from this period of time. It seems to me, as like the Geneva Convention is, you properly interpret it, required. Now, yes, the later letter, the Donovan letter, has more information, but on the technical question of notification, we have one that says it was notified for the period of time in September, and we have another letter that says it was notified for the period of time in September.
And again, I think, Your Honor, it could look like a different case if one letter said, and I'm not suggesting that this would change under the law, but I'm saying what we don't have here. We don't have a Graham letter that says Mr. Muthanna and his family enjoyed diplomatic immunity until September 1st, 1994, and no longer thereafter.
Well, but that's very good, clearly. It says during this period of time he was recognized. That's not inconsistent with saying he wasn't recognized after that time.
It's not inconsistent, Your Honor, but it also doesn't answer that question, and we do have a certification that does answer that question. And as I've tried to emphasize, Your Honor, I think under Baez, and these certifications have a special status here, and we have this Donovan certification that squarely speaks to that dispositive issue of what the status was after that September 1st date when Ms. Muthanna was born, and later when Mr. Muthanna was himself ceased to possess immunity. So I think the critical point is, Your Honor, is that there's no conflict between the documents. It's on the relevant question. The Donovan certification just speaks conclusively to an issue that the Graham letter does not address. And I take your point, Your Honor.
Could I ask you a question about standing, about the next one standing, which the government challenged below but did not raise again here on appeal, but obviously we have an independent duty to assess jurisdiction. If we were to determine that Mr. Muthanna did not have next friend standing for his daughter because she's not clearly covered by Rule 17 and the factors in Whitmore, could we find that there was next friend standing for Mr. Muthanna's grandson, John Doe?
I think...
And would that allow us to reach the citizenship question of his mother?
It's a good question, Your Honor. I'm trying to see as to whether we squarely address that. I think potentially the issue, Your Honor, there is that I can't recall... this case has proceeded essentially with John Doe is in somewhat of a derivative status of Ms. Muthanna, and I'm trying to recall the allegations of standing and whether any have been made on behalf of John Doe. I think it's really focused on Ms. Muthanna, so I may need to think about that a little bit more, Your Honor. I'm not certain of that, but it.
I do think that's an important question, whether the next friend standing question could be separated as to Ms. Muthanna and her son.
Right, Your Honor. And my apologies for not recalling it. It's possible that was addressed at some point, and I'm just not summoning it to mind, but I can look at it, and we can if it would be useful to the court, we could submit something on the point.
Yeah, I would be interested to know the government's position on that question.
Very good, Your Honor.
Is it your position, though, why is the government not questioning the standing issue appeal? I guess I'm interested why that argument was put aside.
Right, Your Honor. I suppose that what I'll say is that we still think that we are right, that there is a lack, that the district court could have appropriately granted dismissal for lack of next friend standing for each of the prongs we set forth and reasons we set forth in the district court. As is often the case, we have not pressed that issue here. We could also address that too, but I do think the reasons we gave, lack of adequate explanation, the fact that Ms. Musana seems to have access to Western media, gives interviews, that kind of a thing, doesn't suggest that she's truly inaccessible and unable to proceed in her own name. There's some question about harmony of interest. So those are our questions, and but I don't know that I can say much more on why we haven't pressed those in defense of the judgment below.
Standing is more readily available for the grandson, given that he is a minor, and so would be within Rule 17, arguably.
Got it, Your Honor. We can try to address that, Your Honor.
Any further questions?
No questions.
Ms. Chumpy, you used up all your time, but we'll give you 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. I appreciate that. I would like to begin first by referring to the October 2004 letter. We do know the purpose of that because at this stage we take Mr. McDonough's allegations as true, and his affidavit states that he requested that letter in response to the Department of State asking him about the status of his diplomatic immunity at the time of Ms. McDonough's birth because he had applied for a passport for her. So because this was a motion to dismiss, which was then converted, at this stage we take his allegations as true on that fact. So we know exactly why this letter came to be. It was when he requested a letter specifically to address his diplomatic immunity or his diplomatic status as of the time of her birth. I would also say, as I didn't mention earlier, we do have the claim on behalf of Mr. McDonough directly, where he has specifically said to the FBI that he wants to be able to provide food and clothing for his daughter and for his grandson. And he was specifically told by the FBI that if he does that, if he provides those specific items to these specific individuals in their current situation, that he will be committing, he'll be in violation of 2339B, and he would be charged with material support of terrorism for doing that. So this is not an advisory or hypothetical opinion. Finally, as to Justice Rao's question regarding standing, again, not surprisingly, we agree with the district court on its ruling on that issue, but I would say that we do assert in our complaint that standing exists as to the minor child as well, and that, you know, that requires examining the citizenship of his mother, since his citizenship would come from his mother's citizenship. If there is to be additional briefing on that, we don't believe it's necessary, but if there is to be any additional briefing on that subject, we would like the opportunity to do so as well.
Any further questions, Dr. Rao, on that issue?
No, I mean, that you know, it is your position that standing, if we have standing over John Doe, we would be able to reach the citizenship question of Ms. McDonough, and his citizenship would be less than that. Yeah, right.
Yes, Your Honor, I did.
Mm-hmm. No further questions.
Okay. Ms. Johnson, Mr. Stewart, thank you very much. The case is submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Honorable Court is now adjourned until Tuesday, June 2nd at 9:30 a.m.